Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Hi, Pertrosa.
You're right.
We, yes.
Welcome to Modcast 73 with me, Rob, R8XFT. Joining me today are...
Hi, Pertrosa.
We, yes.
You're right, the forgiven.
Stick with us.
So Chris, we wanted to speak to you about some of your mods. So first of all, I just wondered, you've got the Swahili plans, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Almost done, actually.
Will that have a 3D leader?
That will not have a 3D leader, unfortunately. Too much work.
Yes. Tell us more.
Unique ability is coral construction. Districts in coastal cities receive a major adjacency bonus from city centers and a standard bonus for being added into a harbor. Plus 30 production towards traders. Their unique building is the Pillar Tomb, which replaces the monuments on Great Britain Point for every two districts adjacent to the city center. One district adjacent to the city center, you still get one Great Britain Point. And unique unit is the Jahazi, a naval support unit which doesn't replace anything. Deluxe in the medieval era. Plus one food, plus one production to all coastal towns adjacent to it. And the unit can heal up their country territory.
Hmm. That's different.
So then you've got this kind of strategic choice here where you have to ask, do I leave this thing at home or do I send it off with my fleet?
You do, although it usually leans towards keeping it home because the price increases for each one you build and this thing can't defend itself.
Right.
So if you lose one, then you have to build another one, but now it's more expensive.
That would make sense.
If you had more than one of these units in the same harbor, would the advantages stack?
Advantages actually do stack.
That's not broken at all.
Unfortunately, I can't figure out how to not get it back.
That's a good thing in some respects, but I suppose it depends. If the ship is in a tile, can a worker still work that tile?
Yeah, the workers tend to work the tile up.
I thought that was the case. Okay.
So that's where your scaling costs come in, though.
Yes.
If somebody really wants to turn their water into teaming and fishing locations, then they're going to need to spend a lot. But where I see this going is if I have, say, a one-tile island city, then I could actually maybe put three of these in the waters. And
very productive.
Very productive and maybe viable, right?
Yeah. That sounds like it would go a long way to negate how weak island and coastal cities seem to be in this game.
Clearly, I'm going to have to pillage this code for the Inuit.
Right.
No, that's a good point.
The Civ is all about coastal cities.
The downside, if you will, of being a really powerful seafaring people is that you have to be on the coast.
Yeah. Most of the abilities really, like the Jahazi is obviously useless if you don't have a coastal city.
Right.
The major part really works if your city is directly on the coast. So if you want tile inland, that doesn't work. It's powerful, but you really do need to be on the coast. And that means Norway can come and kill you.
Yeah, you really want to be on an island's map. But not one with teeny tiny little bitty islands, sort of mid-sized islands. Because if you're on a Pangaea, you're probably not going to get much benefit out of it.
Yeah, that tends to be one of the things you really have to keep in mind with a naval focus div or coastal focus div is that many players like A and Pangaea only. So you have to consider how strong it will be on not only islands, but continents and Pangaea maps.
Agreed.
That can make balance difficult because then you get map-based civilization strength, which can make it still overpowered and underpowered at the same time.
And I mean, that's always going to be a thing. There's always going to be civs that are better on a big land mass.
To get the most out of the abilities, you go, oh, I'm going to play Civ X. Let's do it on like a small continent or an archipelago, however you pronounce that, rather than a giant Pangaea. If I play it on a giant Pangaea, I'm probably going to get stuck in the middle of the Pangaea and I won't be able to get any advantage out of its abilities. I'm not saying that it's bad or anything. I'm just saying it kind of leads you to say, don't make the Pangaea choice, basically.
Right. Yeah, we kind of had that with the Tlingit as well. We tried to build a sieve that had a coastal bonus that then translated into a land bonus, so that you could use them on a Pangaea map because they were a totally aggressive sieve with, if there was no coast, then would they be just a nothing sieve?
The key to it, I think, is if you want it to be a coastally focused sieve, you might want to just keep it to, say, one or two of the uniques and make some of the other uniques focus completely unrelated to it. It might make the Civ slightly less focused and coherent, but it makes them more well-rounded and balanced. So it's that trade-off.
Now, just to clarify here as well, Sucre, you said that was the civilization bonuses?
Yes.
So what's your leader got in store for us?
The leader is even more coastal bonuses, honestly. It's about the harbor districts because the thing, it's the two of us, the Swahili are so dependent on coast, it's like, you really only want to settle on coast. So there's a problem where, like, you only get plus one housing from coastal cities, which is not really comparable to, like, you know, rivers and all that. So I gave the ability based off the fact that he built a really big, gigantic palace on the coast. The ability gives you the harbor district plus one housing and plus two culture, more housing and more culture, if you build it out into a city center.
Was there any reason why you chose to make this the Swahili rather than the Kilwassels in it, which is, I'm guessing, the equivalent that you did in Civ 5?
I feel like Civ 6 tends more towards blobs. In like Civ 5, we did a lot of things. We really tried to differentiate them by having like really, really specific names.
Yeah.
So, like, specifically, I'm also a leader. So, like, if someone really, really wants to do Zanzibar, instead of having to make an entirely new field, they can just make an alternate leader for this one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the benefit with the multiple leaders is somebody can come along, and even yourself, right, and take your Swahili mod and make a leader that is very un-coastal-focused, and then players have the choice, right? Well, that would be an interesting mod if you could actually get into the map and then make the choice. And I'm assuming that the agenda is kind of merchant-focused.
Great people focus.
Okay.
The combination of Pedro and Aminatore. He dislikes civilizations which compete for great people if they don't develop the cities, but admires civilizations that have the maximum number of districts in most cities and is home to many great people.
Another example of that from your mod, Sucre, I'm looking at Senesret of Egypt, where he likes civilizations with many wonders and a strong army, but hates civilizations with many wonders and no army. He's basically going to ignore you if you don't have a lot of wonders. But once you have wonders, then you're on his radar. But then he punishes you for getting lazy. He wants to see a great civilization, not a decadent one.
I think the more we can try to make nuances in the agendas, the better they'll be.
Yeah. Ransom Ham with Siam was a new era for Civ 6 because it was the first real animated talking leader. So that must have been tricky to do.
After Zarya's Hub, it actually wasn't too hard. It was more just time texturing and modeling and all that.
Okay. It would have been impossible for me, but for you, I guess. Yeah.
It's actually pretty surprising because if you can do standard models for Civ 6, so like if you know enough to do improvement models or unit models, you technically know enough to do animated leader models.
Okay.
The basics are really the same. The main thing is, of course, about the animation. That's not hard either, because well, even if you're working with Blender, it's a simple matter of exporting the animation as an FBX file and just importing that into Asset Editor. And it works.
Yeah. If you had to estimate how much additional time it took in the development of the mod to make this animated voice and, frankly, gorgeous-looking reader, how many hours would you say that it actually added to the development time of the mod, rough estimate at least?
I did do the leader separately. I think it took me about a month total. I mean, I wasn't working all the time. Working time, I'd say it added maybe a week and a half.
There might be things that you feel you could improve on, and that's good. That's very good. But my worst feeling about Civilization 6 modding is that you took the highest high of bar of Civilization 5 modding, and then you pushed it up a little bit and said, okay, guys, this is the baseline. Let's go.
Yeah.
You've already got a model that you created yourself with animations you created yourself.
There's one thing, though. Honestly, despite what I think we all say a lot of, like, this the like saying sarcastic is this the most moddable Civ when it's not because the newer doesn't quite work yet. In terms of graphics, it's probably excellent. The tools Firaxis has given us pretty good. We are still somewhat reliant on the Liberator Civ 6 Nexus for the 3D models. But the fact that you can actually preview models reliably and efficiently in the Asset Editor saves a whole lot of time. Because I remember doing models in Civ 5. It's like, oh, I have to export this into the game. Then I have to boot up the game. Then I have to load up the game to see if it works.
Yeah, they did knock it out of the park in terms of graphics modability compared to 5. We're already able to do more with 6's graphics less than a year later than we are even now with Civ 5 on its 7th year.
I agree completely. That was our biggest bottleneck.
Plus, the only thing you can't do with graphics is on the fly change base terrain and make it show up graphically.
And yeah, that's a bit of a disappointment. I'm sure they got requests for that capability, but it is a bit disappointing that they didn't add it in.
They need some way to refresh the engine.
If you want to get back to the estimate, I'd say it took me about 3 days to do the face sculpting because I really am not good at it. The rest of the code took maybe also 3 days because it was much easier. And as a side note, I got lazy with the arms and I just reused patents, so there's that.
I mean, if you say lazy, I say smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
prefer playing as the other legal that you did, a bit chill-along-corn.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a secret day the other day where I played with your Sibs. But my favourite one that you've done is the Zara Yakov, because with the wildcard policies, with the homicide districts, that really works for me and the way I actually play. Out of the different leaders that you've done then, Secret, which one do you like the best?
You mean graphically or...?
Anything. Graphically, gameplay-wise, actually playing the game yourself as that leader.
Graphically, I think the answer is probably obvious, because it's not the language of he's animated and voiced.
Yeah.
But my favorite leader to play as, I think right now, is Zara Yakov. But the fact that he's so faithful, this functions really well with the stability.
Yeah.
It's really nice to have that excess of faith, and it's just like, you know what, I want another worker. Buy some of faith.
One of the leaders that you are yet to do, Secret, Henry VIII, I saw a model of his that you did. Is that still something that's on the cards?
It's obviously going to happen at some point, but given what I've done with Ransom Hang, I'd rather scrap that model and start over from scratch. At the very least, I'd have to redo the body because that is just horrid when I can't go back to look at it. I'm still hoping to do that at some point, although I do not have a design. I just have this vague idea of maybe one day I'll go back and do Henry VIII, maybe.
Henry VIII would be one that I would definitely love to see, the policy mod. It looks really snazzy. In the current game that I have, I'm playing a hot seat game, and when you play a hot seat game, you don't get told to go change your policies whenever there are new policies. So it can be very hard to actually see that you can change your policies or that you need to change your policies, have an opportunity to change your policies. Can you talk a little bit about like the design philosophy for this UI mod?
Well, the main thing that really started the mod was I was never quite satisfied with policies. They are presented as policy cards and policy slots. And that straight away does not really feel like governmental policy. That feels like armor in an RPG.
It was never the cards themselves I had a problem with. I never really thought it was too gamey. But there did seem to be a lot of logistic issues with dragging and dropping cards just not working. It would seem that you had to clear the card out of its slot first and then drag it, which seems to defeat the purpose overall. From what I could tell, you couldn't just drop one onto an existing one and have it override. It never seemed to work right for me.
And yeah, I quite like the cards. It's just, that's just me. But I do like the fact that, again, it's something where the player's having to make a choice between which policies they have, rather than it being progressionary, they're getting more and more abilities for the save. They have to make a choice, shall I have something that's going to speed up the building of the walls for a while I'm building up the defensive, or do I have plus 3 culture in the castle, or whatever. I like that element of it.
This is less about the mechanics of it, more so than the how the user interface handles it.
Yeah.
Which is the policy manager is trying to alleviate.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't actually change how the policies work. It just changes how they're presented to the player.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
So you think about them differently.
Yeah, that's the whole thing that started me wanting to make that mod. The fact that, one, cards felt really gamey. Two, well, the fact that they present it as cards is really gamey. And two, the fact that dragging sometimes is stupid. And I decided to change that by making that policy manager screen where you just click. That's a bit more reliable. While you do keep the slots, I don't keep the cards. I don't call them cards. I mean, the rest of the game still calls them cards, but I don't call them cards in the UI. For me, at least, personally, it's a bit less like I'm dragging something into an inventory slot. It feels a bit more like I'm picking a governmental policy from a set of options. And again, that's one other thing that changed is that I added flavor tooltips to all of the policy cards.
Oh, excellent.
It says the policy name, this is like effect, this is what it is, sort of.
I think that's my favorite part of the mod, is the flavor text.
I could read you one of them, for example. Urban planning. While the narrow and winding alleyways of our burgeoning towns are quaint, they aren't particularly good examples of city planning. Laws on urban planning will bring order to our cities and increase productivity, custom production in all cities.
You know, and I'm going to just go there and say the RP factor, I think, will help players, because one of my biggest problems as well, and you've definitely worked with this, is where you have this merchant slot in the base game. You have kind of almost like one and a half, two screens full of just card after card after card after card after card after card after card, and you have to somehow figure those out. Whereas with this mod, you got a merchant slot. I'm shown in this image 7 policies that I can choose, and then you have the flavor text to kind of help me think. I'm supposed to be playing Cleopatra right now. What am I thinking I want to do, instead of it just being 100% mechanical?
That was the idea behind the mod, and that was what I was trying to do, just make it feel gamey and make it so I didn't get frustrated every time I dragged the policy over and just didn't click.
Right, and just add that missing flavor. As one of the front runners of Civilization VI modding, I'm really impressed by how you and JFD kind of set the tone for the future of Civilization by producing mods like your Lorenzo mod, where you created a leader for JFD's mods, and kind of set this new precedent that says we don't have to fight over who gets to build which civilization, as long as the civilization is well built, of course, but rather that we can just build more leaders for existing mods and kind of have this new era of harmony.
Yeah, stops that argument as well, doesn't it? Well, I would have had such and such a leader as the leader if I'd have done that civilization. That can simply create a leader.
Yep.
And it also allows for much easier leader representation, since you only have to come up with up to 2 uniques for a leader if they already have an existing civilization to attach them to, and oftentimes just 1. So, generally, if you can make part for a leader, you can get them in the game pretty easily.
Yeah.
You might not be able to animate it and voice act it, but...
When Tukrit's known very well for obviously the other creations, sometimes it's easy to forget that he also has done the UI mods as well. So yeah, there's such a wide range of things. And one of the things that as well makes him kind of stand out is the fact that he can do just, well, everything really. He doesn't rely on anybody else for help. He can do it all. And that's really where you need to be, I think, if you want to be able to mod in an ideal world. That's just my opinion.
I can't do it all, so I rely on other people. Except
yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. It's great if you can actually do it all yourself without having to keep asking people for little bits of snippets of code, etc. Secret, I think, is in that lane at the moment. I can't think of anybody else that is. Certainly something to aspire to, I think, if you are wanting to get into modding seriously. Now, that's the direction, ideally, you need to be going in.
It doesn't hurt that I'm actually studying this stuff. I am majoring in game development.
That helps.
It shows.
They didn't have that when I was your age, so, you know, many computers when I was your age, but there they are. Even if some of the mods aren't visually great yet, at least they're having a go at modding. They're getting in the role, and the only way you can actually get better is by keep trying. If everybody looked back at the first models that they did,
right,
and I was definitely in that group, I'm like, oh my God. You know, and I thought at the time that might be good. People can improve. It's all part of the journey, isn't it? So, what sort of programs do you use to create your art?
Well, 2D stuff is all Photoshop. For Civ 6, you can technically model in any program. And of course, the smart ones people usually use are Maya or 3DX Max. But there's also Blender, which is an alternative to that, and it's free. And if you're going to mod the Civ 6, you probably will go through Blender anyway, because right now, to get models into Civ 6, we are reliant on the Liberator's tools, which do expect you to use Civ 6. I mean, to use Blender. That's my base modeling tool, and that's what I use for animation and all that as well. If you're going to do leaderhead, you'll probably want to get into sculpting, in which case it's expensive, but best choice is ZBrush. What I use to sculpt Tom Hanks' face and like add all the wrinkles to his clothes and all that. Because games are rendered in real time.
Yes.
It means that computers can only handle so much data. The poly count is what we use to like count how much detail a 3D model has.
Yes.
The poly count on models like that is usually absurdly high, like probably crash.
Yeah.
The reason people use Blender and Maya and 3D Max is because you want a reasonable amount of size, and with those programs, you know, the polys, you'd have to remake the model with less detail, so then you can convert detail into textures. Somewhat time-consuming process. What I usually do is I go the other way, so I make a low poly in Blender, so very little detail. Then I go into ZBrush and then add the detail there. I have a low poly and one with a lot of detail that geometry almost matches exactly, because I'm ZBrush to add like detail and like wrinkles and all that. So it's a lot easier to transfer the data over.
Yes. Easy if you know how.
And you produce all the textures in Photoshop?
For texturing, I use a program called Substance Painter, which is easier than Photoshop, actually, because you actually can paint right on the model. You load the model into the program, and then you're like, I want this to be gold. And then you paint it gold. Yeah. Then you just export the textures, and you have all the maps that you need for Civ.
So that could actually paint using something that would already simulate the texture, so you don't have to draw in every detail by hand, for example, right?
Using something called PBR, physical based rendering. So what happens is you have a set of maps which give all the details. So in Civ 5, you have the base color, and you have like something that tells you how glossy something is, right? In Civ 6, you have the base color, you have a map that says how glossy something is, and you have a map that says how metal something is, which is weird, but it's sort of how it works. And if you're going to do Civ 6, if you wanted to get that amount of detail, you would have, in Photoshop, you have to do three separate maps and make them match properly. But if you do that in something like Substance Painter, all you do is you just paint gold, and it literally defines all three of those maps for you at the same time.
Yeah.
As soon as you paint gold onto something, it makes it yellow, it makes it metal, and it makes it very, very smooth.
Hmm.
Yeah, it sounds much easier than what I expected it to be. It's still a fair bit of work.
Even if you just want to do building and unit models, it's something I highly recommend if you expect to be doing this somewhat regularly, because it is a lot easier trying to fiddle around and sort of
thing. Is that something that you would recommend using if somebody wants to do a reskin, for example, of a unit?
Oh, if it's just a reskin, that it's overkill, honestly. Because reskins usually just changing the color, right?
Yeah.
If you want to do something like change the material, like, oh, this guy has a wooden shield and you want to make that all metal, like, and add a coat of arms to it, then that's maybe where you think it's going to be sort of something like Substance Painter. If you look it up, I think you'd be impressed.
Yeah, I will look it up.
And actually, it's also a plugin for Photoshop called Pixel that does something similar.
That's pretty cool. Is it expensive?
It goes on sale occasionally, in which case it goes down to, like, I don't know, $60, but it is a professional tool, so it is somewhat expensive. But again, if you're really interested in this, maybe not so much just recoloring, but actually, like, making assets.
Yeah.
For, not just Civ, games in general.
Yeah.
Sort of the standard at the moment for the games industry.
That's a good tip. Thank you for that. Some of the comments that we've received on the threads on Civ Fanatics following the modcast that we've had previously. We've had Senshi, I can't even pronounce his name, Sensi, you know, we know who Sensi is.
Senshi Denshi, yeah.
Yeah, said that he'd caught up with the new season of the cast, and Lee and Mirai give me life. Obviously, Vice and myself don't.
Well, yeah, sorry.
On the last one, Shagley, I've said another great show. I specifically enjoy listening to how you guys overcome the various modding obstacles you encounter as you transition from Civ 5 to Civ 6. Yeah, I think that's quite interesting that we do actually talk about our modding obstacles quite a bit. And one thing that we've said before, which is really good this time round, is that a huge chunk of the crowd that was around for Civ 5 have moved on to Civ 6 now, and are creating some stuff for that. So that's good to see. And also, Greg Sider, thanks for the comment. It's about it being an interesting episode. So, for the future ones, please add a comment, let us know what we're doing right, what we could do differently. If you've got any questions for the next show, that would be a good point to put in there, because then we can maybe answer the questions with the guests that we've got coming up.
You realize you just asked everyone to put a comment at the bottom saying, please talk about my new mod?
Yes, but if they're going to do that, great.
We would love to. We just caution you that we're honest.
Okay. There is that, isn't there? We will make that caution. But it won't be quite as honest as Steam.
We're like everybody else. Some days we feel like we know what we're doing, and some days it's like, huh, what?
Yeah, I would agree.
Every day, though, we learn a little bit more about how the game actually works. And then there's a patch, and we have to learn it all over again.
That's right.
The way or there's somebody writes the script, works out what to do, and then copies what he did.
I do think that's probably the most difficult part of modding right now, is that the game is still in a pretty active patch cycle compared to Civ 5, which has been feature complete and practice for years now.
Right.
So we're now currently having patches that will happen out of nowhere and suddenly break several mods.
Right.
And so keeping on top of that and figuring out what's changed, what you have to do to make your mod work again, that's proven difficult.
It's way too early in the game for Firaxis to even attempt to create an unchanging API.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think as well that previously people didn't really even try until things out for it, and then we had the modding explosion. Whereas this time, people are really having to go right from the start and using some very good stuff as well, some people. It's good to see that. I think as well, like I'm sure you'll agree with me here, Sukrit, is that as the release has come, I would say no doubt there must be a couple of expansion packs for this, like, because there has been for everything else. It could bring in new gameplay plans, which makes you have to go back to those Civs and say, well, actually, do you know what? There's something new that would really fit the Sohemi a lot better than what I've done or one of the others. So there's still that to bear in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if something new that comes up, I definitely would have to update myself.
I think a big thing about the Civ 6 modding community is that much of the Civ 5 modding community migrated to it.
Yeah.
Whereas when Civ 5 came out, most of the Civ 4 modding community stuck with Civ 4, and in fact still have stuck with Civ 4, even post the 6 release. You got that divide between 4 and 5 that didn't really seem to happen, at least on a big scale between 5 and 6.
You had more Civ 3 models coming over Civ 5 than Civ 4 models. Quite interesting. I think you're right, there's always the arguments on the forums to which Civ is better and all the rest of it. But I think that a lot of what needs to be modded, what needs to be done, you're kind of following a similar kind of pattern with Civ 5 and Civ 6. You know, it's XML, full screen readers, etc. There are similar sort of things that you need to do, I think. If you can mod Civ 5, you've got a good head start on modding Civ 6, I would say.
The only thing you really need to learn is the modifier system, I think.
Yeah. One of the great things about the modifier system is that it's made people like myself, who weren't really that good at Lua, you know, some of the other languages that were used by some of the better modders, it makes certain effects a little bit more accessible.
Now that I've actually done a fair bit of work with modifiers, now that I've released the full stuff, I'm actually pretty impressed with what you can do with them.
Mm.
I was able to make a unique ability in which a specific type of unit standing on a specific district type grants bonuses to a specific class of unit within four tiles. I was almost positive I'd have to use Lua for it, but I was able to do it entirely via modifiers, which impressed me to no end.
And the fact that that system is easier to learn than, or seems less daunting than to learn Lua makes it even better, I think.
Speak for yourself. I would just love to just do it all in Lua.
I will say, as someone who has unique abilities that are multiple thousands of Lua lines, it honestly did not feel much less difficult to learn modifiers. You still have to apply the logic to them, and you have to trace how each modifier applies to each thing it's supposed to modify. Some of the restrictions are still very similar to how scripting code works.
Yeah, I think as well, it's different, your background is. So for me, I can see some Lua and kind of work out what it means and kind of make some similar Lua
by changing the unit, by changing the tech or whatever. But beyond that, you know, I wouldn't be able to make brand new code myself. It would seem a bit daunting to me. I haven't really learned that. Whereas modifiers, yeah, they're complicated, but there's something about it that makes sense to me. So I found it less daunting to work out how to do certain things in with modifiers than with Lua. But that said, because probably I've got a simpler mind, I might not have worked out more of the nuances with modifiers yet. Maybe I've just gone to the basics.
One of the things that's intimidating for me starting up in Civ 6 modding is that in Civilization 5, I was one of the big Lua guys, and I could do all sorts of things, but it seems that in Civilization 6, either the rest of you guys, or just the nature of the game, has required a higher level of knowledge of SQL, higher level knowledge of Lua. My Lua code is terrible Lua from a maintainability or usability of the whole system. People like Lee can run circles around me and have a lot of things I need to learn from them, other than how to pronounce Lua. I think Civ 6 has gotten worse that way, in that you actually need to really actually know how to program, not just how to write logic. There are definitely mods appearing on Steam look like they were built by somebody from Civilization 5 who didn't know how to do Lua, but that's not necessary. Even without touching Lua, you can get more creative mods than you ever could have, in some cases even with Lua, just out of the box. Like some of the things that we strive to do for years and finally figured out how to do in Civilization 5 are just attach this modifier to this thing and it's done.
At the same time, it's like, it is really powerful and really flexible, but there are a lot of times you think, I should be able to do this, and then you go look at it and you're like, I actually can't do this because this effect doesn't work the way I thought it did.
Yeah, or for actions to think, let's make an effect that works this way.
Right.
It's really going to depend on what you're trying to accomplish. It may be as easy as it was in 5 Lua, or it may not even be possible.
It all depends on whether they expose an API on the gameplay script side or the UI context side to do what you want to do. Otherwise, the two systems are, as far as I can tell, virtually identical, other than instead of doing player cities, you got to do get player cities and then members within the cities. But as far as the logic and the number of lines you have to write to go through all of the player cities, it's virtually the same. Problem you run into, of course, is that since they went heavily with the modifiers, there's a lot of things that on the gameplay scripts you can't do because they didn't add the method.
The most important thing I think they should add to Lua gameplay script side would be a function that can second set an object to have a modifier through Lua. Set has modifier for player, for unit, for city, etc. so forth. If we were just able to give any modifier to anything just with a specific Lua function, that would open up an entire new world of things. I think that would be the single biggest mind change you could do right now.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. One thing about governments, certainly in the modern and in-based game, is that the art for the government has to be named after the government. So if you've got, democracy, then the art has to be a DGS file called democracy. So there's a little lack of flexibility there.
The way I'm working in Civ right now is, for most of my mods, I do assume that everyone will follow conventional naming standards, because that is how most of the stuff works in a way, like for flavor text, for icons and all that, you do need to follow the naming standard. So for most of my stuff, it's the same way.
I think it has to be, though, for it to work and for it to be more modular, has to sort of conform to some standards.
The wonders, a lot of them are using the same basic build model.
Right.
This time it's the Great Library, and next time it's the Oracle.
It's true.
obviously, especially when you have deadlines and stuff, you're going to cheat a bit.
Yeah.
But I do know that the modding community has a tendency to go the extra mile because they're all working for free.
Yeah.
So
it's less about us working for free, and it's more about us working without deadlines. Like, we could spend months on end on a single model if we'd like to, but Firaxis wouldn't have that luxury. They've got to make releases.
Thank you for listening to Modcast 73. I'm Rob RHXFT. With me today were
Vice Virtuoso.
We yes.
Alright, forgive
us. Good day.
Thanks a lot, everyone, and don't forget to comment on the forums when this Modcast comes out. Take care. Recording September the 2nd, 2017.
Civilization 4 and 5 Soundclips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.